I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
WEEI is proud to be part of the community. The following WEEI public service broadcast is brought to you by the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Community Focus.
You're listening to Community Focus with Dr. Darnell Williams from the Urban League of Eastern Massachusetts.
Good morning, everyone. This is Darnell Williams. I'm your host here for the Community Focus program. And once again, we are bringing you a topic that I think is going to be pertinent to our community, our Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and the nation. I try to tell people each week we try to bring in personalities and luminaries, not only here in Boston, but across the nation. And this week is no exception. This week we're going to be talking about something I think is important around our health. We're going to be talking about a company that's doing some phenomenal work in this space. And we have one of their key executives that are here and flew in from Indianapolis, Indiana. So we're so grateful. We're going to be talking with Mr. Antoine, a.k.a. Tony Izell, who is the Vice President of Connected Care and Insulins at Eli Lilly Company. Good morning, sir.
Good morning to you, Mr. Williams.
Well, you can call me Darnell, or hey, on the mic, I'm called Dr. D.
Dr. D.
I
will call
Dr. D. See, Dr. J was in the 70s.
I got you.
I'm Dr. D is in the 2000s.
All right, Dr. D. thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. For the audience, normally what we do, Tony, if I can call you Tony.
Sure.
We really just try to get a feel for the listening audience to kind of know who we are, brothers and sisters. Where did you grow up? How'd you end up looking so good? You know, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, thank you for the flattering comment.
That's a setup.
I am.
I'll come at you afterwards.
Okay. Well, I'm from Alabama.
Okay, great.
The way I explain myself is I am a black male from Alabama, from the southernmost part of Alabama, who was raised Catholic. So if you can imagine what that was like.
I can imagine, because I know most of the Alabama folks that I know, they go Roll Tide and they talk about no street lights and stuff like that. Birmingham or
Mobile, Alabama.
Mobile.
You're down at the water.
Down at the water. Okay.
That's probably what explains it a little bit. If you know a little bit of the history of the southern part of Alabama, all the way down the Gulf Coast line.
Over to New Orleans. It's all Catholic. And
very, very much has a French influence.
Yeah.
A lot of Catholics.
Very much so.
My mom attended an all-black Catholic high school, as an example. By the time I got to high school, that school didn't exist. But I am the son of Levi and Johnny Izell.
Okay.
My dad was an executive chef. He passed about a decade ago. And my mom is still living down in Alabama, kicking and screaming and doing whatever she wants. She earned that right. Two brothers. My older brother lives in California, works at USC in the hospital system there.
And, okay.
My younger brother is in logistics in the state of Florida. He's 10 years younger than me. So I'm one of the dying breed. I'm a middle child.
You're a middle child.
You know, that there aren't a lot of us anymore. But
By the time you got to be old enough, you were too old for everybody else for you to be in charge.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, I had to figure out how to navigate my way coming up in Alabama. And you mentioned Roll Tide and War Eagle and all that. Actually, I took I-10 and went east. I left the state of Alabama and went to Florida A&M University Tallahassee, Florida.
Panhandle.
Panhandle, so a historically black college.
That's right.
I was in the School of Business and Industry there.
Mary Mathias Bacoon, I think, is that.
Well, they're down a little bit further south. A little further south is our major rival, but, you know, great school.
I know.
Great school.
Great marching band, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, there's a little bit of all of that that you see down there, but it was a great experience.
That's
where I met my wife. And,
great.
There's a lot of history and giving back to the community. You learn through those kind of experiences as well. So a little bit about my background.
What would you say were some of the earlier influences that your mom and dad instilled upon you as a youngster? Because you went from being born to moving over to going up to college. So I don't know what happened in between.
Well, I mean, both of my parents were working. I mean, I'd say growing up in two different places, we lived in the city in the first 9 years of my life, and then we moved out further outside the city.
Okay.
It was not the suburbs, let me just be real clear, but it was outside the city, so I had an upbringing that was different. You know, okay. Never had a need for anything, but, you know, my parents earned everything every day.
Okay, if so that you makes sense. Working parents, your dad parents. Was an executive chef?
He was an executive chef. He taught culinary arts, so he taught at Bishop College.
Okay.
My mom worked at Bishop College, so every day after school, if I wasn't doing sports, you know, I'd be in my mom's office performing bookkeeping duties.
Okay.
So I learned early on the importance of hard work.
Okay.
That hard work matters. And honestly, I think being a middle child, I'd have to explain this a little bit. I've got two other folks in my life who I call brothers that aren't brothers. They're my cousins.
Okay.
We were all within a few months of each other in age, and they often live with us. And so, okay. You know, the importance of sharing, the importance of ensuring that others are taken care of, that family's first, those are all things that I learned. And maybe one other thing I learned growing up, too. And I go back to being an African-American male, raised Catholic in the South.
That's a mouthful.
It is. But if you understand all of those,
yeah,
being in the South as an African-American male.
And being Catholic.
It wasn't easy. Let me just put it like that. I learned early on that mm-hmm. I wasn't going to be given anything. And that didn't mean I couldn't have it, though. And so I think one of the things I've always prided myself on is why not?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's why not me, why not, and, you know, me as the president of the SGA at a majority school when I was in high school, why not, you know, the 145-pound, 6'2", skinny guy play college football, why not? Why not do
tight
that
end?
And go to quarterback? And also be in the school of business.
Quarterback.
No, but it's back to your question.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that whole mentality that you can do it all. You can give
back
to your
community. But when you're 6'1 and up, you usually end up on the tight end.
That's true. That's true.
But if you're 6'1 at the quarterback, you can see all the lanes.
Yeah, with 6'1, 6'2, 140, you usually don't end up on the team. And that's so I was blessed in that way that I got a shot.
That means you were quick and nimble.
Let's just say I got rid of the ball really fast. I did not hold on to it.
I think they call it NFL. That means a quick release?
Quick release. Yes, indeed. Wasn't the fastest guy, but I definitely did not hold on to the ball.
Great, great. So who's your favorite team?
College?
All of the above.
Well, of course, the Rattlers are my favorite team. Florida A&M Rattlers is my favorite football team.
Good along, boy. That's a smart answer, man.
Yeah, and you know, I have to say, growing up in Mobile, the Saints.
The Saints?
Yeah.
New Orleans Saints?
Absolutely.
Okay,
Absolutely.
All right, great, great.
Yeah.
So the key is that what we want to do, listening audience, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tony Ezell, who's the Vice President of Connected Care and Insulin at Eli Lilly and Company. And the reason that I wanted to have Tony is through his colleagues that the Urban League has been really instrumental working with Eli Lilly over the years. And they have been a solid corporate citizen and partner. And when we start talking about what are the things that they are doing, I thought that we could talk about some things. So I want to give the listening audience, one of the things that we do know is that there are over 680,000 individuals within the Commonwealth of Massachusetts who are affected by diabetes. We know that Native Americans, Latino Americans, and African Americans are impacted by this the debilitating disease far more at a higher risk is more the better way to say it. And we have African Americans have a 77% higher risk rate for diabetes. And just for the background, for those who are non-diabetic, what happens with insulin is that insulin is a hormone that is produced in the body, and it really allows your body to balance the sugar, aka glucose, in your body that is absorbed from your carbohydrates and the food that you take. And it turns that sugar into energy and connects with the body cells. So for a non-clinician, I think that's a good way to start. That's what insulin is supposed to do. So you can either have low blood sugar or low blood level or high blood level. All of that is because of where your insulin is going to have an impact on your body. Is that a correct statement, sir?
Yeah, that's generally correct. I mean, it's like any hormone that you might have in your body. It's there to regulate things. And in this mm-hmm. particular case, insulin's purpose is to regulate your glucose levels. For anyone who doesn't have diabetes, when you eat, your body recognizes this, and there's an instant spike of insulin to convert that.
And converts that sugar. That's where we get our little burst of energy. So the bottom line, it says the important insulin is a hormone made in your pancreas. So it's already naturally made in the body.
Absolutely.
But it's a gland located behind your stomach, and it allows your body to use the glucose for energy. And it said glucose basically is a type of sugar found in many carbohydrates. But the fact is there a connection between our diet and the amount of carbs that we eat? And I'll just do a typical meal. And if I don't want to use Thanksgiving because I know we load up.
That is true. At least I
do. My producer is laughing because he knows he's probably guilty. But we'll put mac and cheese. Or we'll do stuffing, and then we'll have gravy, and then we'll have some cornbread with the collard greens. And what am I missing? A sweet potato salad, and then a sweet potato pie to top it off at the end of the day. Or some coconut cake, or some chocolate cake, or even jelly cake. I think back in the day, they used to make jelly cakes. They don't make them no more.
Yeah.
But did I miss anything?
You missed pistachio pudding, I think, is what my wife has. You know?
Okay.
So all of it, and that's just round
that's
one.
That's got to be a Mobile dish.
That's a Tennessee thing.
Oh, yeah, Tennessee thing?
Yeah.
Because, you know, then that means that you got to go back and load up. But, I mean, we do a lot of that.
Yes.
And then we wonder why, then, at the end of the day, that all of those carbs, we may do some cabbage along with the collard greens, but our diet has an impact, does it not?
Well, it depends. So let's first talk about the types of diabetes that one might have.
Type 1 or type 2?
Type 1 or type 2.
Okay.
And type 1 is typically something that's diagnosed where you literally don't make insulin.
At all. Body does not produce it.
Yeah, and there are different reasons why that might happen. There's a lot of science around it now that connects it back to an autoimmune dysfunction, but essentially your pancreas stops making insulin, so you're not making any, and therefore you have to take insulin to cover your glucose. So that's a little bit different.
So type 1, basically, will your pancreas, will it burn out if it's overused over time or something?
Yeah, we can talk about that too. That's typically what happens when you have type 2 diabetes for a very long time. You can overwork it. So if we just stayed on type 1.
Okay, stay with 1.
It's not driven by diet.
No.
It's usually something that happens within the autoimmune system and something that happens to the pancreas, and they end up not making enough insulin.
Okay.
And my dad, for example, as he was older, he had major surgery. He had a Whipple surgery, and they had to remove half of his pancreas.
Well, back up. What's a Whipple surgery?
He had cancer.
Okay.
Pancreatic cancer.
Okay.
And Whipple surgery is when they remove the cancer.
They move the cancer. Okay.
And usually when they remove the cancer, they have to remove a lot of your internal organs, and one being pancreas. So he was rendered a type 1 because his pancreas was removed.
Was gone. Okay.
And a lot of other things happen. But if someone has type 1, it's because their pancreas is not producing. That's the simple version. If you have type 2, it is largely connected to a number of things.
Exercise, diet?
Yeah, typically exercise is a part of it. Diet is a part of it. But if you have it, your doctors probably talk to you about the importance of exercise and diet and carbs. And in fact, in many cases, doctors will teach their patients how to count carbs, because that's usually the culprit. People, they see sugar, they know when sugar's there, but they don't think about carbs breaking down into sugar. So that's a big, big culprit.
I try to share with people in our listening audience, if you're just tuning in to the Community Focus program, you're listening to Tony Ezell, who's the Vice President of Connected Care and Insulin at Eli Lilly and Company. But this young man has a very, very impressive background. He's got over a 26-year history. He's been a chief marketing officer, vice president of customer value at Elanco Animal Health. He, from 1999 to 2007, he's had various leadership positions within Lilly, executive director of sales and marketing. So you've been around the track for a minute.
Yes, sir, I have.
Okay. That's a good thing, right?
It's been a great experience. When I left Florida A&M for my undergrad, I did something my granddad told me I should always do, which is choose your company wisely. And I chose Lilly because of the core values that we have, respect for people, excellence, and integrity.
Okay.
But also because I felt like I could do something I love, which is understand human behavior, but do it for a great purpose.
Okay.
And that's to really make life better for people who live with different diseases. And that's ultimately what I've had the privilege of doing in my 27 plus years with Lilly.
I think that's awesome. And in terms of, as you espouse the values and what attracted you to Lilly, and you've been there for this length of time, that speaks volumes.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're talking about diabetes, and we talked about type 1 and type 2.
Yes.
Type 1, you indicated that there is the body stops producing it. And then type 2 is that you need to have it balanced with the necessary medications that will allow you, and we're going to get into that. But one of the things I try to share with the listening audience before I talked about your background is that we have good bacteria and we have bad bacteria in our body. And when you find yourself at the counter doing impulse purchases, your bad bacteria is saying, feed me, feed me. That means I'm going to get a candy bar, I'm going to get something else that has sugar in it. And you continually to do that a lot because the bad bacteria is sending messages to your brain to tell you to eat the things that you, how did that end up in my hand? I mean, I see it all the time. I have to guard and protect myself from doing it. But is that, have you heard that before?
I have not heard that before, that but analogy. But I do understand that the challenge that people have every day. Some of it's just natural human tendencies. You know, my colleague and I are just talking about having the sweet tooth. Both of us do.
Okay.
And you have to have discipline and understand yourself in that kind of way. But look, I think the fact is if you look at the way we live today, and the access in certain communities to healthy eating at an affordable price. I mean, there are projects that Lilly's involved in. There's some prevention and management projects back in Indianapolis where we partner with the community to do just that, make sure that we provide the right kind of education, help as much as we can so that people understand what are the right types of foods to eat. But at the end of the day, it's all about how do you maintain that.
But, you know, but the challenge that we have, Tony, is that when you, I mean, they tell you when you walk into a grocery store, stay on the outside. Stay on the outside of the store because that's where the fresh vegetables are. That's where the dot products at. Because everything on the inside, I mean, I get scared when I walk down the aisle. I didn't used to do this, but I read the box and read what my carbs are.
Yes.
Because you mentioned the caloric intake for a male, I think it's around 2,400 calories per day.
Yeah, depending on what age you are.
Okay.
Yeah, it goes down. I know mine is a little bit lower now.
Well, what are you, about 2,000?
2,000.
Okay, so.
That's what I'm shooting for.
Well, that's why you're 6'1", and you still think you're on the football team.
No, I'm definitely not.
But the point is that, so 2,200, 2,000, that is a pretty lean diet. That means that you are watching what you are taking in. The average person is like well beyond that.
Yes. A bag of potato chips is 400 calories. I mean, if you eat it, you don't.
It depends on which ones. It could be 440.
Yeah, it could be a lot lower. Yeah, if you get the large bag.
You get the large the bag, it's 440.
I think it's what it's called.
And you just can't put your hand in a bag and eat two or three and say, I just wanted to have a taste.
Not possible. But it does show you how challenging it is on an everyday basis to manage what you eat. And the fact is, in America, that challenge manifested itself in different disease challenges that we have. Diabetes is not the only thing that people
that impact
being challenged with. If you think in our community, I think the actual incidence within African-American community is about 17.5%. So 70%+ higher risk. But the actual incidence is around 17% and just a little bit lower than that for the Latino space, around 16%.
And you have a percentage for the Native Americans that?
Native Americans is well over 50. I mean, and some of that is the history that they have. And so it is, that's a little bit different in their challenge. But if you think about the diet piece of it, you know, there are things that I think a lot of us are trying to do there. one of the things that we're trying to help with is mm-hmm. when people actually have diabetes.
Yes.
And usually by the time they're diagnosed, they've actually been living with it.
And did not know it.
Right. So your 680 number for Massachusetts that you share is 680,000 people who have diabetes. There's probably 120,000 of those who don't even know it.
That's right. I think the range is 4.1 to 5.9 for your A1C. And if you start to creep up into 6.1, 6.2, that's your blood sugar level, then you are either pre-diabetic and you're heading towards diabetes.
Yeah, and that happens usually very early before they're diagnosed. And this is why this is important, mm-hmm. that one of the things we have to do is deal with the situation we have today.
And what is that?
And that is that we have people who have diabetes who need...
And don't know it.
They don't know it, but even those who are actually treating themselves, ensuring that we provide... the proper insulins or insulins that are appropriate for them or products that are appropriate for them.
Well, Eli Lilly is known for the discoverers and manufacturers of medicines for a variety of conditions. Diabetes is one of them. You have cancer, severe migraines, psoriasis, arthritis, osteoporosis, and others. And you guys do a lot of breakthroughs in terms of insulin, and so you're doing a lot of good work. But one of the things that I like about what you are doing, talk to us if you can about the Lilly Diabetes Solution Center and support programs, because those 680,000 Massachusetts residents here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, residents here in Boston or the greater Boston area, what would that mean if they were to reach out and to find out what you're doing with the Lilly's Solution Center?
Sure. Thanks for asking about the Lilly Diabetes Solution Center. We at Lilly understand that today's healthcare environment is a challenge, and we just have to acknowledge that. And having seen that, we made the decision a little over a year ago to open the Lilly Diabetes Solution Center to help, and to help those who were challenged the most. So for those who may be in high deductible plans or Medicare Part D or cash paying patients or others, mm-hmm. Uninsured. We wanted to open this. And since last August 2018, mm-hmm. we've had over just a little over half a million people that we've been able to help through the Lilly Diabetes Solution Center.
Well, let me see if I can break that down into listener terms. Basically, y'all, he's saying that if it costs you too much money to buy for insulin, you need to call that number. Because what they're doing is they're providing help to people to lower their costs and in some cases provide free insulin. Is that another way of looking at it?
Yeah, essentially, if you're on a Lilly insulin and you have concern about the cost of your insulin.
And your Lilly insulin is which one?
We have multiple versions of insulin. So we have Humalog, mm-hmm. Insulin Lispro is our newly introduced half-price insulin version of Humalog.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have multiple variations of those products as well in mixes and forms. We've got Humulin insulin, which mm-hmm. is an older insulin product as well. So if they call in, and Basaglar, which is a basal insulin, but if they call in mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and they just have questions about their costs, whether it's the lowest cost they can get or they don't have any insurance, call Lilly Diabetes Solution Center at 833-808-1234.
So let's repeat that number again, 833-808-1234.
Correct.
Now, the cost of, I see people, and my wife is a type 2. Okay. So that's really made it personal for me to talk about this, and she was diagnosed back in 2004, I believe.
Okay.
And so I've been on this. It's helped me change my diet for watching her go through it. So this wasn't some topic that I was just kind of rolling up off of the bar stool and say, let me just talk about diabetes. It's something I've lived with, the carbs, the diet, the exercise, the whole nine yards. So I thought it would just be phenomenal for our community to hear. If you call that number, 833-808-1234, it's going to give you the information, and you bring your questions to the Lilly Diabetes Solution Center and support programs. Tell the typical, is there a typical profile of a diabetic recipient, what are they going through when, you know, what happens when they find out that they have it and they're saying, oh my God, what do you say to them?
If you're saying what happens when they're diagnosed, I mean, it can be a number of different ways that happens. You know, sometimes it happens because they end up in the hospital with with a significantly higher blood glucose level.
That's a high blood sugar level.
That's usually what happens when they find out, or they've been living with it for a long time
and didn't
they find
know
themselves
why they're
going
sluggish,
to the bathroom all the time and
sweating.
They're tired. And they start to see these symptoms pop up, and that's usually where they really see that they have it. But
something's
honestly,
wrong.
It happens
different.
For many of our folks who are type 2. It happens over time, and their doctors are seeing it, and they're seeing it progress and not necessarily moving fast enough.
But why don't the doctors, when they do our blood chemistries, test us early on so we can see what those ratios are? That give you some signals. I mean, because my doctor tells me if I'm approaching a threshold, she says either you fix it or I'm going to fix it.
Well, I honestly, I can't speak for what the doctors might do in those situations. You know, I can only speak in the personal situation where every year when I do my annual, they do check the glucose levels and hemoglobin A1Cs as a standard panel. But I don't know
what
happens on an everyday basis and why.
But you're Tony, sometimes. Man. You're supposed to know. You're supposed to have some answers for me.
But
man.
Look, I understand when we look at market research what the challenges are.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is on an everyday basis, every doctor's different. What I would encourage people to do, though, is to just ask.
Okay.
It's no different than I'm a 50-year-old African-American man. It's like asking for my PSA to be checked.
That's checked every on an annual basis as well.
I don't think my doctors ask me for that, but I ask for it. I mean, so there are things that, you know, we all can do on that front.
So you're saying that there's to me some self-efficacy on the individual's part to inquire as to where they are in these particular ranges, because the doctor should give you a prognosis of your visit so you know exactly where you stand in each one of these major categories.
Yeah, so sure. I think one of the things, if I may even share some things that we do to try to help, because there are some things that we do in the community, our faith-based initiatives and some things like that, where we try to partner in the community around health.
Okay.
And some of that includes a little bit of what you've been talking about today, sort of the diet part of things. Some of it includes what should you be asking for when you go to talk to your doctor. I think the biggest thing is people need to be very proactive in thinking about their health.
Okay.
And because again, by the time most folks are diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, they've actually had signs of it many years before.
But people don't recognize it even though the signs may be manifest. Is that a fair statement?
Well, clearly, they may not necessarily recognize it in their daily lives, but there are definitely signs along the way. Like I said, whether it's the weight or whether it's the assessments at the doctor's office, what you called pre-diabetes, where they may start to see the glucose levels starting to creep.
My doctor got my attention when she says you're borderline pre-diabetic and living with a diabetic person. It got my attention immediately, and I started to watch my carbs. I dropped about maybe 47 pounds overall.
Wow.
In
That's
order
impressive.
To get it. Yeah. It, she says, well, what did you do? I walked away from all of the things that I liked.
Yeah.
That we talked about earlier. But talk. You're laughing. Why are you laughing?
Well, only because I think that's sometimes what scares people, right?
Yeah.
They feel like they've got to walk away from everything that they like, when in reality, it's not exactly true, right? It's moderation.
It's moderation.
It's I'm not a dietitian, so I want to be really clear. I'm not a nutritionist.
I just know what works.
I'm not a physician. But certainly I think this is why you've got to engage in your health plan and partner with your physician to do the right things. And what we try to do at Lilly is support the community, whether it be physicians with diabetes education. We're one of the largest suppliers of diabetes education materials, whether it's for children with diabetes or adults. We obviously provide products and access.
You're doing some good work in Indianapolis. You have a Lilly Diabetes Prevention and Management Pilot.
Yes.
Tell us what that is.
Well, I mean, it's a little bit of what I was alluding to earlier. It's a partnership we have with, Indiana University, which is obviously one of the top universities in the city or in the state, and has a medical school downtown where we partner with a lot. And really, the whole project is a $7 million project that's focused on the neighborhoods. It's a little what I was talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm,
if you actually
mm-hmm.
get into the neighborhoods and actually start to implement things that are part of the high risk areas where you talked about walking on the outside of the aisles. Well, in some of those places, there is no outside aisle.
I'm not laughing, but I'm just
saying. No, it's the truth. I mean, we've lived in communities like that, I'm assuming.
By the way, did I tell you I'm from Gary, Indiana?
Well, there you go. You know what I'm talking about. So it literally is what you talked about earlier, helping the communities understand how the importance of your diet is to your health. So it's about prevention. And that's important. It's not just about treatment once you have it, but how do you prevent these things from happening?
Mm-hmm, So when you think about all of this that we're talking about, when Lily is doing some really good stuff because of his work that he's doing with the community, I think that is very, very powerful. When you think about it in that sense, you have to think about, Tony, that you are changing people's lives. You really are.
Well, I mentioned this earlier, why I chose Lily, and I say that deliberately. I chose Lily. Back when I came out of school, the options, we had a lot of options, and I chose Lily because of the belief in helping others. And so that's important, and I think we do, when you look at what we've got in our pipeline.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.